So today we have two groups of guests that are going to be on the show with us. We're going to kick off the show with co-director Chiel, after I got her name so well, Chioma Anyanwu from Spinning Tree Theater, who is going to be telling us all about their new production, Emotional Creature, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World. Then after a brief bit of music at the bottom of the hour, Fiona will be talking to... Who will you be talking to, Fiona?
I'm going to be talking to Anna McGuire and Paula Nepote from the Kansas City Women's March.
So lots of good things to talk about today. But before we get started, well, you know, I was going to make some small talk about the snow and tell people out there to be careful because about half the lights were off on our way up here. And
I think half the lights in Kansas City are down.
Yes, not just the traffic lights. And trees are down and roads are blocked. And stay home and carry on listening to KKFI.
I know, that's as good an excuse as any, I suppose.
With your cozy hot chocolate and your real fireplace.
Of course, we're here in the studio carrying on, even though we had to drive up here for an hour in the worst car ever to be driven on a snowy road, a Mustang with no weight in the back seat, but I made it.
And those of us that are listening on the streaming apps and still able to hear us will be delighted to know that Ebony Johnson is already in the studio, so things will be continuing after our show.
I know, she has 4 hours to run all by herself, and...
So shout out and props to Ebony.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, we don't know that yet. We might be stuck here as well.
True, we might not be able to get out of the car park at the end of the show. But looking forward to brighter things, how about we start talking to our guests?
I know, we've had enough senseless banter here that's wasting Chioma's time. So, Chioma Anyanwu, welcome to Every Woman.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Very well, thank you. We just love having... Spinning Tree Theater and its production staff, directors, and actors and actresses on our program. So we've had Spinning Tree on the 10th Voice many times, and I was very pleased when we were attending the premiere showing of their production, The Nance, and looked in the program and saw advertised this production that is coming up here just next week on January 17th. According to your press release, which Michael Grayman Parkhurst, co-producer of the show, sent me, said that the piece is based off of a... it's basically based off of a adaptation from Eve Ensler, who did the Vagina Monologues and took her best-selling book into a... theater experience. So why don't you tell our audience just a little bit about it?
Well, the show is called Emotional Creatures, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World. And it's dealing with the societal expectations of girls around the world here in the United States. And we have pieces from the Congo and Bulgaria and Kenya and Iran and China. And it deals with women, young girls, being told or enforced upon how to just be or exist right now, and how that kind of differs from country to country or culture to culture or religion to religion, kind of tells you what the norm is and what is expected of young girls.
And what age are the girls? Are they all very, very young women, or are they young adult? I'm just curious about that.
Well, all the actors, they are young adults. They are all definitely not teenagers anymore, but they definitely read as teenagers. They all look very, very young. And the age that they're kind of playing is like young girls like 13, 14, 15, 16, that kind of time where you're just sort of trying to figure yourself out, and sometimes figuring yourself out means that you betray yourself to be accepted by others. And I think many of us can relate to that when we were younger, you know, and it kind of relates to that here. And then we jump to other places where it's like female genital mutilation is the norm at a certain age, and and it just kind of bounces around and talks about body image and sex trafficking and love and the experiences of love and affection. And there's this character who's talking to her parents and saying that they can't understand how she loves the way that she loves, and people imposing expectations on you when you're sort of floating through that time in your life where you're figuring yourself out. And this character in particular seems to be enjoying just not knowing and floating through it, but the world is imposing upon her what they think that she should be. And I think a lot of us can relate to that.
That sounds like a very powerful exploration that will reach every woman in the audience, or every...
Oh, yeah.
And probably it will reach men in the audience, too, who also sometimes have very unrealistic expectations upon them. But
absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a problem that seems uniquely focused upon women, but it sort of affects all of us in a way, although not to the same severity, because we still live in a patriarchy, of course.
Yes, yes. And one of the things that's very uplifting in the show is there's sort of a spoken word piece called My Short Skirt, and she's kind of telling you what it is and what it isn't. And there are some pieces that are just about taking back the right to express ourselves however we want to without having to explain it.
That makes a big impact, because there's still so often many people in the news protesting and complaining because they, as girls or young women, are getting sent home from school to change because their top might be distracting.
Because we're not teaching people to control themselves.
Yes.
We're not teaching young men to control themselves, you know?
And we're also teaching that the girl's education has no value because she's losing time in school. And
yes.
Because she's sent home because the boy's education and their lack of control is more important.
Yes, yes. And it's been normalized. It's been normalized. I mean, female genital mutilation is all about taking the pleasure away from the woman, because the woman needs to remain pure. And if she's, you know, sexually mature and she's wants to explore that, she shouldn't be allowed to have pleasure because that somehow makes her dirty.
Yes, and we've actually had guests on from Kenya on the show before, and one of them's mother actually had that done to her, and it was normal in their village.
And all of her aunties, yes.
Yes, and when she was growing up, said she wanted to have that done because it was a sign to her of becoming a woman.
A rite of passage.
Yes, and her mother said, no, don't let anyone do this to you. Just because I've had it done and because your aunts have had it done and everyone else has had it done, it is not right. You have the chance.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how that cycle is broken and how sometimes it's not. We talked about in rehearsals how some people in the United States are trying to fight for the right to be able to have that option to do that to their kids.
Yes, we've heard things from Minneapolis especially, which has a very large immigrant community from the Horn of Africa region, Somalia, Kenya, and so forth, where that is really coming to a head. And unfortunately, it's a much more complicated social and ethnic issue than
Absolutely.
A lot of people realize that it is. So when we had the women from Kenya on the show, I was surprised by how they said how prevalent the peer pressure was. When they go to school, all the girls are eagerly gathered around saying, have you had it done yet? Have you had it done yet? You know, maybe we can go do it together and so forth, like getting a tattoo.
See, it's a whole new world that, like, we can't even comprehend. We can't even fathom. But in other countries, this is normal. This is absolutely normal. There's nothing, quote unquote, wrong with it. And that's one of the things that I respect about this show, is that it doesn't try to sugarcoat anything. It tells you the truth, and it tells you it doesn't justify it. But it also doesn't necessarily comment on it too much. The characters comment on it, but I really love that she's sharing these stories and it bounces around so seamlessly from different parts of the world. I mean, there's even in China, they're in a factory where they make Barbie, and she's comparing Barbie's dream house to the house that she lives in with all of these other girls who are making like pennies a day making Barbie's heads because a Barbie is sold every 3 seconds. So it's pretty interesting. It's a very interesting production, I think. And there's some music throughout it. It's not a musical, but there's some music throughout the production that really lends to the piece.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask is that I talked at length with about this with Michael, and he said that this was your Spinning Tree debut as a co-director. Is this your debut as a director for any production, or have you done this before?
Oh, this is definitely my directorial debut.
Oh, really?
Congratulations.
This is definitely the first time I've ever directed anything except for back in undergrad, you know, over a decade ago for a class, which is totally not the same thing. So,
how has that gone for you?
It's actually been sort of a dream of an experience. I've really enjoyed co-directing with Andy, and it's been really great learning through the process, but he's also very, you know, adamant about me jumping in and chiming in and not being afraid to say something. He's very about us being equal parts, which was a good learning experience. And it's really kind of interesting to be on the other side of the table. And I already had an appreciation for directors, obviously, but wow, definitely, definitely now it's definitely increased tenfold. It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot of eyes and a lot of, it is kind of like a collaboration because every actor sort of speaks their own language and you have to try and figure out what that language is so that you can help them get to where the show, the production needs to be so that the story is told truthfully and effectively.
Now, we have never actually, of course, been directed or in a production, of course, that Michael and Andrew have produced. But the impression I've got from talking with some of the actors that have appeared in their productions are friends of ours. And from just watching how they work, we get the feeling there's just a lot of heart in Spinning Tree Theater.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They definitely care about their actors. They care about their actors. This has been a really beautiful experience. And we do have a really wonderful cast for this show. All the women in this cast are fantastic. There's six women. It's Ivy Bowie, Madeline Campbell, Allison Jones, Deanna Mazdra, Michaela Sullivan, and Emily Vargo. And they're all rock stars. They're all doing very beautiful work. And it's hard. It's a rapid-fire show, you know, no intermission. It's a pretty fast one, but they are giving you all the energy and all the life and all the story. And we've worked them hard, and they're still working hard.
And they are all local actors, if I recall correctly.
Yes, they are all local here in Kansas City.
I like, too, how Spinning Tree draws so greatly upon local talent and gives a lot of folks here a real opportunity to contribute their expertise and talent to a local production such as this. I think that's great for the community.
I think they definitely see people's potential and want to dive into that and help them dive into it as well.
We are speaking with Chioma Anyanwu, who is directing Emotional Creature along with Andrew Grayman Parkhurst at the Spinning Tree Theater. We're going to take a brief break for some station announcements, and then we will be right back to talk more about the play. Hello, and welcome back to Every Woman. We are speaking with Chioma Anyanwu. Sorry, I keep messing that name up. Oh, my goodness.
No, you're fine.
who is co-directing Emotional Creature, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World for Spinning Tree Theater.
And you said it's very rapid fire, so that would be similar to the style of the Vagina Monologues?
Yes, it's definitely vignettes. The girls, they hardly leave the stage. I mean, they are there to support one another when somebody is, you know, performing a monologue. They are there in the background. They are there on the stage with them at times, but they hardly ever leave the stage. It's definitely sort of a little marathon for the actors, but doesn't necessarily feel like one for the audience. But they're running a marathon for sure.
So you said there's no interview. So how long are they actually on the stage with no break for then?
It's about an hour and 15, hour and 20.
Yeah, that's quite a long time without being able to dive off and have a sip of water or at least go, did I do that bit right? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, they definitely get, there's probably one or two times where the women leave the stage for probably about 2 minutes. We have, like, water bottles placed, definitely keeping them hydrated. But they are rock stars. They are warriors. So they've been doing a really great job. We've been doing some runs, and they have been holding up. Their stamina is there.
How have they been reacting to the material themselves? Because you said it's quite powerful, impacting material. How have they felt and developed as they've been doing this material and rehearsing it through with you?
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed about this process is that we really got to do table work, which is where we don't even get up and do what we call block the show, which is, you know, setting, you know, the traffic patterns of the show, where the actors will be, where they're going to be going, where they need to be by a certain time for whatever reason. We just sit at the table and we read the script and we talk about it. We do a full read through of the script, and then we'll go back and we'll read through the script scene by scene, like each monologue, each scene that has all the women in it for a short bit of time before we move on to another monologue, and we just section it out and we talk about them and how we feel about them and what we've learned about them, because the ladies got the script before we started rehearsal, so they got to do a little bit of research on the characters that they would be playing when they play the characters that are from different countries. So we just sit and we talk about how we feel about it. We talk about the facts of it. We look up things at the table together about it, articles that we've heard about, things that we've heard about in the past, things that we've heard about that are going on right now. It's an intense process, and it can get emotional. And it's something that, you know, it's not always, time doesn't always allow you to do that in a creative process, in a production process, because time is always, it never stops, you know? So we don't really get the time a lot of times in many processes to really sit down and get to do table work as often as we did. And we got to do table work as a cast, and we got to do table work one-on-one with the women with their own pieces. We just sit down, Andy and I, with the one actor, and she would read, and then we'd talk about it, and then she'd read again, and then she'd talk to us about it, and we'd just have an open dialogue about it. And sometimes, you know, we'd go off on a tangent, but then we'd always come back. Like, the trajectory was always in the right path, and it always ended up circling back to the main issue that we were talking about. So that's always a luxury, to get to have that much table work.
Another thing that we really like about productions from Spinning Tree Theater is the venue at the just off Broadway theater, because the audience is so close to the production, so close to the action, sometimes literally 3 to 4 feet away from the actors. You're not way far away up on a stage. I mean, it's almost like something's happening in a parlor or a lounge right in front of you, the whole production.
Right. You're basically, especially if you're in the front rows, you basically feel like you're on stage.
Exactly, yes.
It's a really intimate space, and that's one of the things that I enjoy, especially for this production, being such an intimate space, because these are intimate subjects, and I think they are supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
And
especially being so close, I mean, you can't get away.
And another thing that we like is that usually for each show, there is one day where after the show, you have a round table where people can ask questions about the production, like we're getting the luxury of today.
Yes, there's a post-show talk back, I think usually once in the run, and ours will be on Thursday the 24th. After the 7:30 p.m. performance.
Speaking of the run, what are the dates if anyone's interested in coming to see it?
That will be January 17th is when we start previews. That'll be this coming Thursday, the 17th. We will have our first preview, second preview on Friday, the 18th, and then we open officially on Saturday, the 19th, and run through February 3rd.
Excellent. And so that people can find information, could you give us the URL for the website or for where they can buy tickets?
Absolutely. You can find the calendar information and ticket information at spinningtreetheater.com. That's theater with an R-E.
As well as should be.
Exactly. Michael and I just had this conversation. I was like, do people spell it any other way? And yes, they do. And then you can also purchase tickets from the central ticket office, and you can reach them at 816-235-6222.
That sounds really fantastic, and I know that we're looking forward to all of the good things that you all do with groundbreaking productions focusing on LGBT subjects, women's subjects and feminism, on other socially important and compelling subjects.
Like breaking gender stereotypes. I know that the next one coming up is Billy Elliot, and that, of course, takes him from doing boxing, which is a perfectly acceptable masculine activity, to ballet.
Right, which I love that story, so I'm excited to see that one. I've never seen it on stage, I've just seen the movie.
I didn't know anything about it. Now you've spoiled it for me.
Sweetie, it says that much on the website.
It'll still be great. It'll still be great. The story is so wonderful. It really is.
Yeah, it doesn't say whether he succeeds or fails at ballet, just that he wants to go from boxing to ballet, which is obviously not an acceptable thing for a manly man to do.
Well, you kind of spoiled it, because now I know he either succeeds or fails. There's no in between.
Oh, there's still a whole lot of story in there. I go see it.
So, of the stories, I know this might be an unfair question, but, that's what we do in radio. Of the stories that are told in the production of Emotional Creature, is there one of them in particular, the story that really spoke to you more than the others?
There were a couple of them, actually. There was one with something that we all, I'm sure, have gone through, which is the body image and the eating disorders. I grew up a competitive gymnast from the age of like 6 and a half to 14 and a half, and I know that I personally had dealt with some body issues of my own, and feeling like I had to look a certain way, especially because, well, not just because I need to look that way. Well, I'm an athlete. I have to look that way. There was that, but then the sex trafficking, which it's not like I can relate to that on a personal level, but there's just something about, before that monologue even starts, there's something, a line about, there's a bunch of disappeared people. I don't know how I know they exist, but I know they do. And just this idea of a girl just walking down the street or something, and somebody snatching her up, or, her being thrown out by her parents on the street and going to, an authority figure to protect her, and then being sold into sex trafficking. Nobody knows where you are. You don't know if you'll ever get home. I just can't fathom that. And that one was a really emotional one when we did the table work for that. The actor that is performing that piece, she got very emotional about it. And just the thought of disappeared young girls, just literally just being used for their bodies, like they're nothing. I can't see past that. That one was a really interesting table work session, and one that I felt like I took home.
I know that is, I understand exactly what you mean by feeling overwhelmed by that issue. We have had on Chris Wade from the Justice Project of Kansas City to our show, and I used to work for the Justice Project, and we know that sex trafficking occurs right here in Kansas City on a monthly basis, and it's often young women that are, for one reason or another, literally thrown out of their house in their teenage years by their parents and have no resources and nowhere else to go.
Right. And it's also an issue that's being used as an excuse to separate children at the border from asylum seekers.
Yes.
So it's a double-edged sword. People are getting injured by it. by being trafficked, and people are being injured by it, by it being used as an excuse to separate children from their families.
Right, right.
So I think that this is really a production that is very topical for our times right now, especially as we have a greater and greater focus on the resurgence of the woman, so to speak, mm-hmm. and politics, and in finally taking another step forward to reclaim or gain more of the national stage and move a bit more towards equity. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this turns out.
Yeah, I can't wait for you all to see it. I can't. It's a really great piece. It's a great piece, and I think it's a piece that's needed right now.
Chioma, I would like to thank you very much. We all would like to thank you, actually, except, I don't know, Anthony might be asleep. No, Anthony.
I'm not asleep.
Sorry, we had to put a bit of humor in on a snowy day. We'd love to thank you.
No, appreciate it.
For being on Every Woman and telling us about your production of Emotional Creature, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World, which will be running from January 17th through February 3rd at Spinning Tree Theater. And we've had a great time talking with you, and say hi to Michael and Andrew for us.
I definitely will. Thank you guys so much. Stay warm.
Thank you.
You too.
We're going to take a brief musical break here and listen to an appropriate song. It's going to be Snowbird by Anne Murray, and then we're going to join our guests on the phone talking about the Kansas City Women's March.
Hello, and welcome back to Every Woman on this terribly snowy day. Hopefully, from what I've heard, we have power back on at the tower, and our regular broadcast people should be able to hear us. So welcome back to those of you listening that way. And I'd like to also welcome the first of our guests from the Women's March organizers, and that is Paula Napote. Can you hear me, Paula?
I can. Thank you.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
And we can hear you. So,
perfect.
While we get our second guest on the phone and set up, could you give us a little overview of your involvement with the Women's March and how you got drawn into organizing it, and how that involvement happened for you?
Sure. So this is actually my second year with the Women's March for Kansas City. And, this is the third March for the event. The first year, I actually didn't attend it, and when it was held in Kansas City, but I did, I was just really moved by that, because I just remember, like, being at my house and seeing, watching, the news channels and seeing all the different marches across the country come on the screen or across the cities, and just feeling very inspired and empowered and just really excited that this was a movement that had begun. And then last year, what was kind of interesting, you might remember that for a long time, Kansas City wasn't really having a march. And it just so happened, it was kind of one of those serendipitous things that I know a little girl, her name's Bella Fickney, she's 10 years old, and I'm really good friends with her dad, Reverend Randy Fickney. And she was watching the news, and she turned to her dad and was like, "Dad," and this was the Friday before the Women's March on that Saturday, where they're having them across the country. And she's like, "Dad, why isn't Kansas City holding a march?" And he's like, "I don't know, Belle. I guess, nobody wanted to plan one." And she's like, "We should plan a march." And Randy was like, "What are you talking about, Bella?" And he's like, "We can't do it. It's tomorrow." And she's like, "We need to make this happen," and kind of challenged him, and then she was off on her way to school. And so Randy kind of turned to, he's a minister at Unity Southeast, and he knows a lot of women in the community as well. And so I was one of them that he turned to and said, "Hey, we can do this. Let's get this organized." But he said, "This is a women's march. My daughter came up with the idea, and I'm going to let these strong women kind of take over and lead it." So that's really what happened. Within a matter of 24 hours, really, we had planned a march last year, and we made it a march. It wasn't just a rally. We marched from Brookside Park to Swope Park, had the rally, And it was really cool. I mean, a lot of people were like, man, I'm so glad you have this. Thank you for doing this. The city needs this. And so that was kind of my first, like, it was kind of trial by fire. Like, we just jumped in full throttle, not knowing what we were getting into. And then we said, you know what, we did it last year. Let's do it again this year. So we did. And so we actually, though, this year had a little more time to think about it, a lot more time, actually, and really tried to get a lot of the groups in Kansas City involved and really want to make this event an opportunity to showcase just the great empowered women that we have in Kansas City, because we have what we found, and Anna will speak to this a little bit more when she goes through our program, is that there are just so many amazing women in the city that are doing so much to put the causes of women and make strides in what we're doing. And it's just been really, I've been really honored to be a part of this, and I'm super excited about the event that we're having this Saturday, kind of showcase these ladies and give folks an opportunity to take some action.
Thank you so much for that. That sounds, well, particularly last year where you had to all jump in at the last second and make things happen. Sounds absolutely scary and amazing.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the other thing, too, and I think this is one of the unique things that it's funny, just kind of hearing about other marches in other cities, is we call it a women's march, but I don't know if other cities actually have a march. And we had last year a 3-mile march. So it was something where, and we had, I want to say it was probably 100 people on the route. And it was just so, so empowering and just so fun. And we started and, you know, came up Meyer Boulevard. So we're going to kind of recreate the same route this year, maybe make it a little bit shorter. So we're looking at probably around a 2-mile march this year. But it's just something where there's chanting and people are laughing and, you know, we're on the sidewalk and cars are honking and just, you know, you just get, people are coming out of the shops waving and cheering. And it's just such a just an amazing and empowering process, something to be a part of. I mean, I still remember that. And so what we did was we started in Brookside and we came up Meyer Boulevard. So it's kind of by the Landing Mall, and it comes through. And then we went across Highway 71 over into kind of that Slope Park area. And, you know, really symbolic of kind of crossing that bridge. And, you know, it's just, I think it's symbolic of the women's journey, you know, where we're starting and we're marching and we got to keep moving forward and ending up in Slope Park. I mean, it was just really meaningful. And we're going to do it again. So I think that's kind of unique about our march. And then I think the second thing that we're adding to it this year to make it even that more meaningful is, it seems like when I've gone to a lot of rallies, and we've had a lot of great rallies this year in the city, but what we want to do with this march is have people come out, enjoy the program, feel empowered, feel energized, but we also want to give them tools. So going forward, so that when they wake up on Sunday or Monday, they can take some action. So it's not just about having a good time on Saturday and then, oh, okay, let's get together a year from now and do it again. What we want to do is make sure that anybody that attends the rally, if they have a particular passion, say it's around Medicare for All or helping domestic violence or victims' rights or getting more women into office, that they have a contact and some information of what to do to make that happen. So we've invited several nonprofit groups to set up tables and booths during the rally. And they kind of coincide with our speakers so that participants can go up to them and get information. Because what we want to see is when we do this in 2020, we want to see even more progress so that we can look back on 19 and go, we've made strides in all these areas. And so we just want to give people that tool and that opportunity so that they can do something on their own. Because that's how it happens. It's got to be grassroots. I mean, it's got to be people like you and me going out, taking a cause and really getting energized and excited and doing something about it.
That does sound exciting, and the fact that people can carry things forward with them sounds like a really great outcome instead of just people feeling, woohoo, I'm all fired up now and I don't know which direction to be pointed.
But exactly.
I'd like to ask, since I know that there are people out there who have disabilities or just cannot physically walk 2 miles. Do you have any options for people who are mobility challenged? Can they go straight to the rally? And is there like parking and disabled access for people?
Yes. So kind of the logistics of the day is going to be the march is going to start at 2 p.m., and we're going to ask people to start kind of gathering, lining up around 1:30 so that we can march at 2. And what we would like folks to do is the rally is actually going to be in the parking lot of the Unity Southeast Church, which is right by, it's footsteps from Swope Park. It's right at the entrance of Swope Park. And so what we're encouraging people to do is to park in that area because there's Southeast High School across the street. There's a church right beside us that has a large parking lot to park there. And then we're going to shuttle folks down to the start of the march. They could also Uber, too, if they wanted to do that. One of our learnings, this is what happens when you organize a march in 24 hours, you don't quite think through everything, was when we had the march last year, everybody parked at the start of the march, and then we had the rally. And then when the rally was over, we were like, oh, how do we get people back to their cars? So what we thought we'd do this year is have people park at the rally. We'll get volunteers to shuttle people back. I think we're looking at getting maybe a van and some things like that, too, where they can Uber march, and that way their cars are here. Now, if you can't march, that's just maybe not your cup of tea, the rally will start. We're estimating the march will be about an hour. And then we're thinking the rally's going to start maybe 3:15, 3:30, and it's going to be outside in the church parking lot. So that should be easily accessible for folks to get to. So it will be there. And, again, we're hoping that, we would love folks to participate in both, but we understand that sometimes this is an option. So you can just come to the rally. And we're going to have music, and the booths will be up by then as well. So you can kind of wait for the marchers to get here. What was really cool last year was we had a similar type thing where we had folks waiting for the marchers and they kind of cheered us on as we came through. So that was kind of exciting too. So don't feel like if you can't make the march that you'll completely miss out. You can just come straight to the church. If you want to bring lawn chairs, whatever you need to do to make yourself comfortable, that's great. And then the rally will start around 3:15, 3:30.
That's excellent news.
We're encouraging people as well to join in. If you can't do 2 miles and you want to join in, we're going to be coming down Meyer Boulevard, so you can join in at any point. If 2 miles is too much for you, but you still want to march, jump in the middle and finish up with us.
And I was just about to introduce that we have Anna McGuire on the line, but she jumped in by herself. So thank you for that extra piece of information, Anna. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. And Paula said that you have more information about who are all those wonderful women and wonderful organizations from Kansas City that are going to be represented next Saturday at the march and the rally.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I've been just blown away about how many amazing people that we have in the Kansas City area. And we're super excited. We just found out this week that Sharice Davis is going to be speaking. So we are over the moon about that. But then we have a lot of other great speakers. We do have a couple of Kansas City councilwomen who will both be speaking, and I believe they're both running for mayor. Alicia Kennedy and Jolie Justice will both be speaking. We have Deanna Munoz, who I'm sorry, pronouncing her last name incorrectly, from the Latina Arts Foundation. She's going to be telling her story. She has a story of empowerment of her journey. We have Chris Wade, who has actually some TED Talks out on YouTube that's going to be talking about sex trafficking, which has been a problem here in Kansas City.
She's with the Justice Project of Kansas City, of course.
And ironically, we just mentioned her in the first section of the show, so that's a really great segue and a link for anyone interested in finding out more about that topic.
Great, yeah. I'm super excited to hear her speak. We have Stand Up KC coming. They're bringing a couple of people to talk about economic and racial and gender equality. We have someone from our Unity Circle. Her name is Jackie Hawkins, who will be speaking, and she has some history in working in civil rights as well. And then we've got some great entertainment and some poets. We have Sherry Purpose Hall will be doing some poetry, and Jen Harris. And then we have Summer Osborne singing, and the Kansas City Woman's Chorus will be there to actually, they'll be taking us off in the beginning.
Do you have any speakers that are representing the intersectionality of, say, the LGBT community?
Several of our speakers are, a couple of our speakers are LGBT. I'm not sure if we're speaking, and I'm not sure if any of them are going to be speaking specifically to that. I know Stand Up KC will be, definitely have that as part of their program. We've kind of had to pick, as far as I'm concerned, all issues are women's issues, and we've kind of had to pick the big ones and make sure that we have the big ones covered. We have someone speaking about Medicare for All, and, you know, economic justice and those types of things. We're definitely not going to be able to hit every woman's issue that's out there, unfortunately. And that's also one of the reasons we wanted to tie in at the end, people being able to go out to these different groups and you know, taking action on the ground, because there's just so much work to be done.
So, for example, the Center for Inclusion is one of the booths that will be set up so that folks can get more information on. And we've actually, Samantha Ruggles was someone that we have been partnering with a lot. And I have to say, too, I think Ann and I both have just been so excited about just the different members of the community kind of stepping up and wanting to be a part of this. And then also just it's been good education for us also to just kind of know who to reach out to. And Ann and I both, we are admittedly kind of novices at this. Like I said, last year I just kind of stepped up because it felt like there was a gap that needed to be filled. And now that we've kind of taken on more of this leadership role, she and speaking for myself, but I know we've had this conversation, we've just learned so much about the community and just, again, all the different groups and just how important it is that we have that inclusion and have that diversity and make sure we are representing all women. And that's something that's been very important to this team.
And she mentioned Samantha Ruggles, and I feel like we have to give a shout out to her, the Kansas City Center for Inclusion. She's just been amazing in helping, along with Dr. Frances Grimstead, have just been amazing in helping get us connected to people who are really, like, on the ground doing the good work in Kansas City.
Samantha is a great friend of us personally and of the show here at KKFI, so definitely shout out to Samantha. And I did notice...
Yeah, I've been trying to get her to speak, but I don't know if she's going to or not. She hasn't given me a confirmation on that yet.
I hope we get to hear from her. And I did notice you specifically said that you have the Latina community included. Do you have any other women of color?
Several of our speakers are women of color. One of the women from Stand Up KC, Sherry Purpose Hall, is a woman of color who's a poet. Jackie Hawkins is a woman of color. Alicia Kennedy, who's running for mayor. So we do have several people on that are going to be in the program that definitely are representing that group.
I'm glad to hear that, because that's often an underrepresented group in feminism as a whole and in society as a whole. I know that one of the women's marches in California has actually been cancelled this year because they realized at quite a late date that they had been rather exclusive of trans women and women of color and of the intersection between them. And they chose to cancel it rather than run it with poorly planned last-second people or risk excluding them from being able to participate in the march. So I'm very glad to hear that you've planned ahead and included more of the community there.
Yeah, we really have tried. That's been our goal from the beginning, was to make sure that all voices are being heard. And again, covering all women's issues and all the different voices. It's a very large group, so we're definitely doing the best that we can.
And if anyone, it's a little bit late, but if anyone wants to help at all with this, how would they get in touch with you to offer assistance?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a couple ways. Probably the quickest and easiest way is we have our Facebook page, and it's the KC Women's March Brookside to Swope. They can go out, and there is a link out there for any. It's a sign-up genius. If they want to sign up, they can. We also have a Facebook page, so if somebody wants to join that Facebook page, they certainly can do that as well, and the link is there. So that's great. This coming Wednesday, we've been having weekly planning meetings every Wednesday at the Fellowship Hall at Unity Southeast, and we will have our last meeting this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m., and we would love to have folks come. It's not necessarily a planning meeting anymore. We're really more in execution mode now. But we would love to have anybody who's interested, because we do need volunteers for the day of the event. So we're looking for volunteers to act as marshals, both for the rally as well as the march. And we just need folks to kind of help as we get groups set up. It'd be great to have some volunteers on the ground for that. We need folks, if they want to help with some of the shuttle rides, that would be appreciated, helping people find parking. Just all the little things that I think would be great to just make the event flow smoothly and make sure the participants are informed and know what's going on. They can certainly reach out to Anna or myself on Facebook as well. We would love to take the volunteers. And then also this Wednesday, I do want to call out, we are going to, it's a planning, kind of our last meeting, but we're also going to be making signs for the march. And that's something, too, if you have a particular passion around it or super creative, or please come. We'll have the materials there. We'll have poster board markers. And you can certainly make some signs. Because what we found last year is that sometimes people get excited and they come to a march or a rally, but they don't necessarily, oh, I should have made a sign, or I forgot to bring my sign. So we'll have them made, ready to go, and to hand out, so participants can really feel involved and engaged with the process. The other thing, too, I do want to call out is on our Facebook page, we are selling signs as well. So if anybody wants a sign from the march, they can send back. So if somebody wants a sign, we'll certainly work with you on that. And then another really cool thing, and I know Ann and I are excited to just see how they're received, and we're going to be selling these the day of the march, is that we have some handkerchiefs that have the KC March logo on them. And this is something, actually, Dr. Francis Grimstead had called out, that I guess in a lot of Central American countries, for different causes, like maybe it's domestic violence or, family issues or things like that, they have a handkerchief with a certain color in the logo, and people, men, women, children buy these, and they tie them to their book bags, they tie them to their purses. And it just symbolizes, so you can be out in public and see it and go, oh, you support this cause,
yes.
Or you support that.
Yes,
so
of course.
We're really excited, and we're hoping, we're hoping we see a lot of these popping up around Kansas City.
That's a cool inclusion of another culture. Unfortunately, we're running a little short on time, so if you would like to summarize what time and the logistics of the march very quickly for us, please.
Sure. Absolutely. So the march starts at 2 o'clock. We're asking folks to line up around 1:30. It'll be at Brookside and Meyer intersection, kind of around the Price Chopper. And again, we're asking folks not to park there. Park at the rally. The rally's going to be at Unity Southeast Church. And then we will find ways for you to get back to the start of the march. The rally will start between 3:15 and 3:30, so you can just arrive there if you like. We'll have folks to direct you with parking. We'll have the nonprofit groups there. And we just hope to have a great attendance. And we're also asking folks, share it on Facebook, invite your family, invite your friends. We'd love a great turnout.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing those details with everyone. And I hope that your march goes very well next week. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.